Welcome to CERT's podcast series, Security for Business Leaders. The CERT program is part of the Software Engineering Institute, a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find out more about us at CERT.org. Show notes for today's conversation are available at the podcast website. My name is Julia Allen. I'm a senior researcher at CERT, working on operational resilience and software assurance. Today, I'm pleased to welcome my colleague, Mike Hanley. Mike is currently leading the laboratory efforts for CERT's Insider Threat Team. We'll be talking about those today. And Mike and I will also be discussing his team's current research in how to design effective controls and indicators to prevent, detect, and respond to insider attacks, indicators and controls that organizations are finding helpful to get a handle on how to manage their insider threat. Just as a point of information, we have posted three previous podcasts on CERT's Insider Threat Work that our listeners might want to check out. So with no further ado, welcome, Mike. Glad to have you with us today.
Thanks, Julia. Glad to be here.
Okay, so it's been a while since we've added an update on the Insider Threat Work to our podcast series. I think the last one was August of 2009. So could you please give our listeners an update on kind of some of the highlights of your team's work since we last talked?
Sure. So last time you were talking with Don Capelli, who's the manager of the Insider Threat Team here at CERT, and one of the first numbers that people always ask about is how many cases are we operating from? So all of our research is going to be born primarily out of the case library that we've been collecting since our original study with the Secret Service starting back in 2001. And when you talked with Don last time, we were operating with about 280 cases of insider threat. Now we're up over 500. So that's 500 actual cases of insider threat crossing IT sabotage, fraud, theft of intellectual property, and espionage involving national security information. So we've gone quite a bit up in terms of how many cases we're actually working from, and that's really helped us out in terms of doing a lot of our analysis and modeling work.
Are those cases mostly, again, from your relationship with Secret Service, or do they come from a wide variety of sources?
So roughly the first 150 came from the original Secret Service study. Since then, we've done a lot of collection on our own just from sort of open source sources. So we do track things like media reports and court documents for current cases of insider threat. We try to sort of track those to conclusion, and once they've been prosecuted, we'll go through and sort of finish up our analysis and make sure those get cataloged along with the rest of our insider threat cases. But, you know, the number of cases that we originally got from the Secret Service is now, you know, close to about a third of the cases, whereas it used to be the original whole starting point. So we're getting a lot of stuff from open source.
Great. And what about some other areas of work that have been going on in the team?
Sure. So we've also continued a lot of our system dynamics modeling work. On our website, we've got the original IT sabotage model, which we did several years ago, but we've also recently put out two system dynamics models for theft of intellectual property. So that's sort of a hot topic right now. People are concerned about how can I protect my IP from a malicious insider who might steal it for financial gain. And we've actually put out two models in a single paper, one of which is an entitled independent. So this is an insider who feels like they have ownership over an IP sort of by virtue of how much time they've spent in developing that product. And then we've also got an ambitious leader model, so that's somebody who's a strong individual recruiting other insiders or outsiders to facilitate their theft of IP that they may not directly have access to or may want but may not fully understand by virtue of not having been intimately involved in the development of that IP. So that's sort of our more current modeling research, and we're also going back and taking a look at a study we did back in 2006 where we compared our IT sabotage model to a few cases of national security espionage. So as I mentioned, our case numbers have gone way up from our 280 last time we talked, and we're now taking another look at national security espionage cases, of which we have over 120, and looking at a new system dynamics model in that space as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. So as I was getting ready to talk with you today, I reviewed a recent paper that you've developed on deriving technical controls and indicators of insider attack, and I noticed in the paper that you said that when you're analyzing a crime committed by an insider, you often have to deal with incomplete data. You've got kind of pieces of the puzzle. So when you're putting a case together to make it a legitimate case for your case database, what are some of the essential information pieces or items that you look for?
Sure. So particularly for my work, so in the technical space, looking at ways we can apply our knowledge of insider actions against organizations to sort of technical tool sets and improving ability to detect these events, we're looking at things like what types of assets were targeted by the insiders. So do we have some idea what types of things are being targeted and why? Are they always assets of value? Are they business plans? Are they engineering specs? Does it vary by type of job that the insider is in? Things of that nature. We always look for the type of exfiltration involved if it's a theft of IP case. So is it something where the insider printed a document and walked out the front door with it, or was it sent off in an encrypted zip file off the network? So we try to distinguish between those, because obviously those are going to have very different indicators that we might look for in terms of detection. We also look for who, in the case of an asset being delivered to someone else, we look for who's sort of the intended recipient. Does that tell us something that's of interest about the case? Is it a competing firm? Is it something I'm just taking for myself to try to sell independently? Those are some things that we also try to track. But we try to track a sort of a range of technical items that are of interest to us, but those are some of the key ones that we want to make sure we always get access to.
Okay, so do you have kind of an example to illustrate the points you made?
Yeah, sure. So a recent case that I can give you an example of that we've looked at involves an insider who was in an engineering role for a firm that was manufacturing consumer electronics. They had been contacted by the chairman of a foreign firm about a possible job opportunity, and this was over company email, so they were sort of exchanging notes about, yeah, I'm interested in this job opportunity, what would I have to do to get this job at the foreign firm? And the answer essentially was, bring with us IP that you have access to now at your current job. The insider downloaded a very large volume of data within a 30-day window prior to their resignation, which I'll talk about in a second. Downloaded a large amount of IP and sent it off the network through company email off to this outside competitor organization. So there are a lot of indicators that we try to extract from a case like that. So first off, we know there was a large volume of data moved across the network internally prior to the actual exfiltration of the data. So we can use various network sensors and instrumentation to observe that going on within a network enclave and see, okay, well, this client workstation is pulling down a very large volume of data or an abnormal amount of data if we do some testing to see sort of what the normal baseline is from a sensitive file server that contains sensitive documents or specifications for one of our products. So that's sort of a first, maybe a candidate indicator that we might want to look at. Another one is, who am I communicating with? So if I'm communicating with a firm that's a direct competitor or that's outside of the country and I have to worry about things like ITAR restrictions, then that's another thing that I can sort of query on. And I can look back and say, well, I know a lot of people are stealing information via email. Can I sort of tie all these attributes together and look for email that's going to foreign competitors or outside of the country with large attachments on it? So we can sort of start to build progressively from the descriptors that we see in the cases to start putting together these sort of candidate indicator sets that we deploy on various sensor systems to see how effective they are. So there's an important distinction here. So I use the word candidate because these are all sort of very first cut at doing technical work on insider threats. So this is sort of new to us in the last couple of months, because traditionally our work has been behavioral and we've looked at sort of insider threat as a holistic problem. Now we're trying to focus in a little bit on applying some of that knowledge to these specific technical problems. And to do that well, that requires sort of working at the intersection of the behavioral and the technical. So taking tools that we've got today or tools that are specifically designed to combat insider threat and focusing on what those are trying to collect or alert on based on things that we learn from our behavioral models. So I mentioned in that case example that the insider was stealing the data within 30 days of their resignation. So that's one of the most striking findings from our theft of IP model that I mentioned earlier, is that something like 65% of our insiders steal that data within a 30-day window. So that's sort of a key finding that I can alert on. And based on what we know about the insiders who are stealing IP, that's something that sort of gives us a basis to run with. So when we start wrapping these elements up together, we end up with sort of a complete candidate control set that we can start testing and tuning to see if this is something that might be effective general guidance to distribute out to people.
So, Mike, you've started to get us into some of the content around indicators and controls and kind of profiling behavior in some of these cases, but I think it would be helpful, so it doesn't feel too overwhelming, to kind of think about them in categories as you describe in your paper. So you talk about prevention controls, detection controls, and controls to help with response. So could you say a little bit more about both controls and indicators in those three categories or buckets?
Sure. So any candidate control or indicator that we look at generally is going to fall into one of those three buckets. So the first that we look at are, what are candidate controls or indicator sets that might assist with preventing the insider from completing their crime? So these would be things that would sort of be more of an active defense that would prevent an insider from, say, emailing something off of a network or downloading a large volume of data from a sensitive file server. So this is going to actually have the intent of preventing the insider from completing their malicious act. One of the things I think we're doing a good job looking at right now is detection. So we know enough from our system dynamics models about how insiders behave, and we know enough about sort of the technical details of how they go about stealing information or damaging IT assets to say, based on sort of matching between those patterns of behavior and the patterns of technical actions, that if you see these signs, this is an indication of malicious behavior that you should potentially look at. So detection being, we think something happened or we think something is in progress that's worth looking at to determine whether or not it is actually a real instance of a malicious insider damaging the organization or stealing data.
So when you're in the detection mode, can you give an example of some of the, I don't really want to so much get into tools, but how do you monitor for supporting detection? What are some of the kind of the key methods that can help an organization know if an insider attack is in progress or is about to happen?
Sure. So I think first things first, to step back from the technical side and recognize that insider threat is not just a technical problem. So you can intervene early or have some indication that somebody might be at risk of committing a malicious act against your organization if you have sort of good practices across physical security, human resources, individual managers to sort of get buy-in across the organization that insider threat's a real problem. And if we're all talking about things that we think might be suspicious, then we can sort of intervene before these things ever become a problem. From a technical side, though, a lot of organizations have a robust set of network instrumentation already in place. And I think one of the things we find is that people don't necessarily realize that they can use a lot of these tools that they already have. So things like packet capture, IDS, any other kind of sort of firewall architecture or any kind of host-based system that potentially could observe a lot of the indicators that we see in our insider threat database. For example, if I see somebody sending off a large volume of information off the network, and I'm concerned that that could be a problem, well, I could maybe use my mail server logs to go back and see who's sending off large attachments and who are they sending them to. And I might find in that data, you know, oh, I have an employee who's sending off large attachments that are encrypted to a foreign firm, and that might be something I want to go back and investigate. Another example might be, you know, if I'm downloading a large volume of data from an internal server that I shouldn't be downloading from, I could potentially see that with normal network instrumentation that suddenly shows there's a huge amount of utilization on this link between a client and a sensitive server. That's something I should go maybe look back at. And the more of those sort of indicators that you can tie together, the more confident that you can be that these sort of candidate indicators are maybe leading you toward somebody who actually is behaving in a malicious way.
Okay, so we've talked about prevention and detection. So all well and good, but bad things still happen. So
right.
What about controls and indicators on the response side?
Of course, insider threat's a hard problem. You may not always be able to prevent, and you may not always see an attack that's happened to your organization. So if you find out after the fact, a lot of the candidate controls and indicators that we want to deploy have sort of the added benefit of assisting incident responders. So they're going to leave behind trace indicators or trace data that will help us go back and reconstruct the events of the crime that the insider perpetrated to help us figure out, okay, who was it that did this, what did they take, and what's the damage to our organization? Because we find that in a lot of feedback that we get, a lot of organizations don't prosecute insiders, not just because they don't want to be embarrassed, but because they don't have enough information to get back and confidently say, it was so-and-so who actually committed this crime. So we want to help people get back to having some sort of attribution so that if they do choose to prosecute, they've got that option. And I think the more information that you've got with respect to how a crime occurred, hopefully that can help you facilitate your recovery operation and get back to a steady state.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's—I'll tell you what—let's turn our attention to, I know, an area that that you're quite passionate about, which is the Insider Threat Lab. And so you've got this incredible wealth of cases. You're starting to get a real handle on controls and indicators, and then controls at the prevention, detection, and response levels. But I know that the lab is all about kind of putting this all together in terms of real cases, and I know you've developed scenarios that you actually use in your courses to help people walk through and experience real cases. So can you say a little bit about how you actually put a demonstration together in a lab setting to explore the extent to which indicators and controls will help in a particular attack situation?
Sure. So the first thing is there's a direct benefit to people who are seeing some of the demonstrations that we're putting together, which is that I think it does a nice job tying back behavioral modeling, which we're doing, which can sometimes be seen as a harder thing to understand. That's maybe a little bit more of an academic exercise. It ties that back to tools and operational problems that people are having in organizations by sort of showing to them, these are the patterns that we would observe in a real case that we can recreate in our lab, and these are how the indicators, the technical indicators that we're concerned about, might be instantiated in such a way where you could observe them. So it sort of provides people with a really good learning aid that takes them through the steps in a very methodical way and shows them what they should actually be looking for, and sort of maybe sets off a light bulb that says, hey, you know, I could maybe be doing something like this with tool XYZ that I already have deployed in my organization, or I've seen that type of pattern before. This is the kind of thing that I maybe want to keep looking at in my organization. So I think it does a good job sort of driving a lot of the messages home when you show somebody a demonstration of a case and what could have been done to prevent it. So we look at things like, you know, an insider who's emailing sensitive IP off the network to a foreign organization. So we look at what are some things that we would want to include in the demo that demonstrates that well. So things like technical indicators of sending email to a competitor domain. That's something we can alert on and that we can actually show in a demonstration. But from the behavioral side, insiders who steal IP within a 30-day window, that's one of our key findings from our theft of IP model, that 65% of insiders do that. If we can sort of show that in the demonstration there are real timestamps that show 7 days before the insider left, they were sending off email to the foreign competitor containing very large attachments. We also show how the organizations can use the tools that they've got today. So one of the demonstrations we recently did, we used Splunk, which is a centralized log aggregator that we've seen in a lot of infrastructures. So we can say sort of, here's how you could do maybe a simple example query that doesn't necessarily fit your organization exactly, but we want to give you this example and show you how you might be able to tailor it to the tools that you've got or the logs that you're feeding in from your own systems and write sort of a query that might help you roll up all these indicators into one set. So it sort of ties together the behavioral indicators, the tool sets, and shows you how you can sort of roll that all up into a very good operational way if you're working in, for example, a security operations center or in a NOC and you're worried about insider threat.
Great. Well, thank you for that explanation. It makes me want to take one of your courses and sit through one of the demonstrations. I think it would be really a very educational experience to kind of immerse yourself in one of these situations. I did want to ask you, though, what roles in the organization are typically involved? I mean, clearly your IT ops folks are involved, maybe some of your information security folks are involved, but when you talk about these indicators and controls, who's actually using them or benefiting from them or trying to monitor for them? Who do you find most typically involved?
So I think the focus that we're trying to get with these controls is we're looking at folks who are working at security operations centers. So these are the technical staff who are monitoring all of the same sensors that you normally are worried about today that you think of in like a typical border architecture. So I'm looking at what's my firewall telling me, what's my log aggregator telling me, what are my intrusion detection systems telling me. By and large, we're looking mostly toward the more technical operators who are running these systems, who are looking for these types of alerts on a daily basis, and sort of teaching them how to use the same tools that they're maybe using today in a little bit different perspective to look not just at what's coming in from the outside of the network, but what's potentially going out or what's happening solely within the enclave that's concerning.
Well, this has been great, Mike, in terms of just kind of setting the stage and giving us a refresh and an update on just some, I think, some very foundational work. I know that there's a great deal of interest in, because so much of what you're doing is based on actual cases, too, so that people can learn from the research your team has done. So speaking of which, kind of what's next in your pipeline? What do you have planned for the coming year in terms of your research efforts? And also, if you could point our listeners to some sources where they could learn more about this work, that would be great.
Sure. So we're going to take this lab, and we're really trying to address the problem that I see in the insider threat space, which is that we have good tools, both specifically designed for insider threat detection and response, and also good network security tools that aren't necessarily designed for that, but could be repurposed to detect some of these indicators. And we also have really good behavioral models of insider threat coming out of CERT and other organizations, and we need to work at the intersection of those two spaces. So we need to find ways to map back the capabilities of some of the technical tool sets to the patterns that we're observing from a behavioral perspective. So that's where we're really going to be driving a lot of our work over the course of the next couple of years. Like I said, one of the ways we're doing that is we're taking, you know, our really large case database set. So we've got over 500 cases. We break those down even further and look at some of the things that I mentioned earlier. So what types of assets are being taken? How can we map that back to a given behavior? And can we build a really good set of standard controls maybe that we've tested thoroughly with some pilot organizations who we're looking at testing with over the course of the next couple months to vet the controls, provide good guidance on how to customize them based on what types of tool suites? Because, again, we don't want to be focus specifically on a given tool. We want to sort of abstract ourselves from that a little bit and then provide guidance on how an organization can customize based on specific intelligence, operational needs, other concerns that they want to address. So providing sort of that standard set with good guidance on how they can implement these controls and not just help organizations by saying, here's what we know, but sort of help them become a little bit more self-sufficient by saying, you know, these are the things that we recommend and these are things that make sense to us based on our data. But clearly, we don't have all cases of insider threat. A lot of cases go unreported. A lot of cases aren't detected. So the cases that we have are the guys who got caught. And that's why we say these are candidate controls and indicators right now, because they're really based on that large but limited subset. So we want to make sure that people have the ability to take their own cases, apply that knowledge based on our behavioral models and our technical guidance, and then develop their own candidate controls. So we've got a paper out that sort of describes some of these things, as you mentioned earlier, you alluded to a paper that we just wrote. It's called Deriving Candidate Technical Controls and Indicators of Insider Attack from Social Technical Models and Data. That's a mouthful, but it's essentially how do you map back behavioral data to technical controls. That's going to be available on our Insider Threat website on CERT.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough for your time and great advice and the work that you and your team are doing. I think our listeners will find this invaluable, and so I thank you very much today.
Thanks, Julie, for having me.